Hello. Welcome to the Chamber Orchestra of Europe podcast. I'm Simon Mundy. Usually I talk to the orchestra's players, conductors and soloists. But in this episode, I thought it'd be interesting to look behind the scenes. The job title Personnel and Planning Manager sounds dull. But without Caroline Ferry, the orchestra would never assemble and none of this would happen. Caroline, you came to the orchestra in 2017. How did you arrive here? What were you doing before?
Before, I was working at the Wigmore Hall in the management department, working with John Gilhooly, putting together the whole schedule of concerts, which was something like 450 a year, which was quite some number to be dealing with, plus a load of learning events and other things that went on at the hall. But I was very much office-based. I was very much planning ahead, which is a part of my job now, which I very much enjoy. But at the time, I wanted to try something a bit more hands-on and a bit more interaction with musicians themselves rather than just their agents and diaries.
I suppose, in a way, you've gone from something that was very static in the Wigmore Hall. I mean, the hall itself isn't moving. No. To something where actually it's moving all the time. It's all the musicians are always moving. They're always moving across Europe. They're not just moving around the country.
Yeah, exactly. It was a huge difference of life and way of working. And it's been really exciting getting everybody from all over the place, from all the different countries in Europe and some from Australia, to one place to rehearse and then to move around from country to country on tour. It's very demanding, but it's really exciting. And I've had the opportunity to go to some really interesting places.
And what was it, what have you found most complicated in a way? What were you expecting it to be like and what has it actually been like?
I can't remember now, 5 years ago, what I was expecting it to be like. I was always expecting it to be a challenge, hard work, and it was a new challenge. I think the amount of being on tour for me and my colleague Patrick, who do all of the touring, is... you're working from dawn till dusk, basically. I don't know whether
well
I was fully...
Well past dusk.
Exactly. I don't know whether I was fully expecting that when I first joined. There's a lot more hands-on, like stage shifting and all of that kind of thing that I wasn't doing at Wigmore. I was very much, as I said, planning, and there were other people that did all of the moving chairs. So
carrying 17 harpsichords for one performance, yes.
Yeah, or on a recent tour, I ended up having to leave the concert to move 40 suitcases from the bottom floor of a hotel lobby to the first floor conference room, which was, you know, a great activity.
And tell me, apart from being the resident porter, what does the job entail?
So my job's kind of split into two main areas, one of which is planning. So looking ahead at the schedule, I take over the schedule from Simon Fletcher, the general manager, once he's sort of mapped the concert dates and rehearsal dates. And then I take over and look at the rehearsal schedules and talk to the conductors and their agents and soloists to fit everything together. And then on the other hand, I'm personnel manager. So I am dealing with the musicians directly, both in terms of their work patterns, which tours they're doing, which tours they're not, but also all of the political discussions and things like trials and appointments and trying to get the musicians to come to conclusions about things.
So they're your first point. Yes, they're your first point of contact, really.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. Or I am theirs, yes. Whichever way you look at it. Yeah, so working directly with them has been really interesting, actually. And as I said, running regular violin meetings with 18 very opinionated violins has been fun, but it's always an achievement when you get people to make a decision.
So you need to be a bit of a politician as well as a manager.
Absolutely, yeah.
And especially when they're all coming from different cultures and different attitudes to everything.
Yeah, and actually being all of the meetings are run in English, and that has its own challenge for some of the other members that come, that for whom English isn't their first language. So there's always a bit of a balance trying to make sure that everybody understands exactly what has been agreed. Otherwise, in 2 months' time, you come back to the same conversation and you've got five different interpretations of actually what happened in the last meeting.
And are you amazed when the sort of general chaos you start with ends up with a beautifully organised, not to mention beautifully performed concert?
Yes. I suppose I am amazed, but it always happens. I haven't had one tour that's been a disaster. It all somehow works out, despite the many challenges that are thrown at either me and Patrick and Simon or at the musicians themselves. Yeah, it always works out, and they're always fantastic on stage. And I think Patrick and I very much see ourselves as absorbing any of the tensions that might be going on and trying to make everything run as smoothly as possible so that the musicians can really just concentrate on performing the music to their absolute highest standard.
Do you get shouted at occasionally, or are people usually good?
Occasionally. I mean, they're all really lovely. Everyone has a level of stress when they're on tour, especially if we're moving around the place every day and they're trying to be rested and be able to perform as well as they can. But there's always things that need doing and meetings that need to be had and conversations that I need to have with them. And you can get someone on a bad day, but in general, they're very nice.
Before coming to the orchestra, Caroline read music at Manchester University, and she's still a violinist when she's not managing concerts. She also had a spell at the Prestine Festival, the festival on the Welsh border, devoted to contemporary composers that, like the orchestra, has been celebrating its first 40 years. When she joined the Chamber Orchestra of Europe, everything had been running much the same for as long as anyone could remember. Then Brexit kicked in, with all its new restrictions on movement and work, swiftly followed by the COVID pandemic. What had dealing with all that been like, I asked?
Yeah, it's definitely been a challenge. It's hard to remember exactly what it was like before now. Obviously, just immediately before each tour, there's always a crunch point where if somebody's going to cancel at the last minute because of illness or a family emergency, there's the 2 days maybe before the tour where I'm sort of on tenterhooks waiting for the phone to ring. And the occasions that happened were very annoying before COVID. But now I look back and appreciate how little that happened, because now every day, or even every day on tour, we're testing, and or if people are feeling unwell and they do a test, I just wake up in the morning and have to immediately look at my phone to see if anyone that day has tested positive, and I have to find a replacement cello or horn player from wherever we are in the world.
Do you now start every tour with a reserve list?
I should do. It's very difficult to do, because in order to have anyone on reserve, they have to have already cancelled other work, and you can't ask people to do that if they're not going to be needed. You can't have people sitting and waiting. So, yeah, that's quite difficult. But I just see my job as having to make it work. And amazingly, it always seems to work out. We even had on our Scandinavia tour in February, on the final concert day, we were just getting on the coach to go to the airport, where we had a charter flight to go to Denmark, to Aalborg. And one member of the orchestra, happened to be the principal oboe, had not yet done his COVID test for the day. And my colleague Patrick got him to do one, and it was positive. and our flight was departing in 2 hours from Oslo. Aalborg is sort of in the north of Denmark, and I mean, even Copenhagen is 4 hours away by train. And somehow we managed to get the principal oboe of the Oslo Phil to pack all his stuff, run to the concert hall to pick up his oboe and join us at the airport. It was kind of a beautiful example of having a charter flight, although it's terrible for the environment. It was essential on that day because our double flight route had been cancelled. But it meant we could hold the plane for the oboe to come and join us. And then he saved the concert, because if he hadn't have been able to come, it would have been quite a challenge to try and find someone else to be able to come and play.
You're going back to the football analogy, it's not like having a bench full of subs.
No, sadly not.
And what's the most complicated tour you've had to organise?
I think before COVID, or it was actually a series, we had four tours really back to back. And one of the concerts involved a contemporary music concert in Munich. And it was just one concert. But each piece was a completely different instrumentation and formation, and just juggling all of the rehearsal schedules and then managing all of the stage moves was really a feeling of accomplishment. There were three of us running around dressed in black, moving chairs from place to place and stands, and it was, you know, you really felt like we'd nailed it by the end. I think more recently with COVID, our first big project after the pandemic, back in Baden-Baden, we ended up having to send all of the British players, including ourselves, to other European countries in order to get into Germany, because at the time, Germany was banning entry from the UK. So for me personally, I went to Lake Como for 10 days and worked from there, which was quite a good perk. But we had people flying to all of these different places and then getting them to Baden-Baden. And the Festspielhaus in Baden-Baden was so supportive of that. You couldn't do that with many tours. But it's so crucial for the COE to have all of those people. All the musicians come from so many different countries. But if you suddenly lose a big chunk, like the British contingent, it would have made such a difference artistically to our Beethoven recordings. So it was just essential that we had to get them there.
Let's talk a bit about some of the soloists and the people who you've worked with and who you've really enjoyed working with over the last 5 years.
I mean, soloist-wise, I'm a violinist. So working with people like Liza Batiashvili and Janine Janssen, they're really idols of mine and have been for many years. So it's been absolutely wonderful working with them and getting to know them a little bit as well. We don't see the soloists as much as the conductors, but I always try and make time to watch the general rehearsals when we have superstar violinists like them playing, because it's so inspiring for me myself as a musician. Not that I get to play so much at the moment, being on tour all the time.
And do you play in professional orchestras, or are you playing...
I play in a couple of amateur orchestras in London, actually, one called Orchestra of the City and another called Blaze Ensemble. I definitely like to play a bit more than I do, but it's just a hazard of the job. I'm not there for the rehearsals, so it doesn't always work out.
Let's talk a bit about the repertoire that you've organised over the years, and what were the series of repertoire that you really enjoyed putting together and come out at the end and thought, well, that was extraordinary. I'm so glad I worked on that.
I mean, most of the repertoire very much comes from the conductors rather than being suggested in-house, as it were. But there's been some really fantastic programs that I've been involved in. I mean, actually, the most recent tour I think will live on as one of my favorites. Yannick Nezet-Sagan brought Clara Schumann Piano Concerto and two Louise Franck symphonies to the COE recently in Baden-Baden. And for me, it's just so important that we're playing this music, and the Louise Franck in particular is almost tailor-made for the COE. It's really fantastic music that's been unjustly neglected for hundreds of years.
They've come back into fashion for the first time since the 1840s, haven't they? Really?
Exactly. And people have lots of opinions about that. But for me, I just think, you know, Clara Schumann was 14, I think, when she wrote her piano concerto. And it's just been, like, it's fantastic for, you know, there might be areas of it that if she'd have had time to work with an orchestra properly on it, she might have tweaked in places, but she just wouldn't have been given that opportunity.
And one thinks of her and Mendelssohn doing the same at roughly the same age. Mm-hmm. Extraordinary.
Yeah, exactly.
When you've watched the orchestra performing and you've seen them coming to grips with a lot of this really quite interesting repertoire, do you sometimes feel that you're watching history, musical history being made?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a feeling of that. I mean, any of the recording projects with Yannick in Baden-Baden have really, they've all been eventually released on mostly on Deutsche Grammophon. And the combination of Yannick and the orchestra just brings such a special quality to everything. And when you know about things like the Beethoven Symphony Cycle with Harnoncourt from years ago, that was such a pivotal recording, really, for the classical music industry. And you just sit there backstage while all of that's going on, quite happily tapping away on my keyboard, doing some work. But it's easy to sort of just become accustomed to it. But it's really nice to think back to all of the projects that I've been involved in, and actually what the future of those might be. And the recent recordings with Yannick of the Beethoven are really fantastic, what I've listened to so far, and hopefully that will give yet another pivotal recording of the Beethoven for future generations to listen to.
I've been talking to Caroline Ferry, who's been with the Chamber Orchestra of Europe for 5 years, but leaves in the autumn of 2022 for a more settled existence. The snatches of music were from the first movement of Mendelssohn's Italian Symphony, the introduction to Mozart's The Magic Flute, the Dance of the Knights from Prokofiev's Romeo and Juliet with Liza Batiashvili playing the violin solo, and the end of the scherzo of Beethoven's Seventh Symphony, all conducted by Yannick Nezet-Sagan. The last is from the new box of all the Beethoven symphonies recorded in the Baden-Baden Festspielhaus for Deutsche Grammophon. In between was a little of the Andante from Schubert's Second Symphony, conducted by Nicholas Harnoncourt, recorded at the Stiriati Festival in Austria in 1988, but released as part of the Complete Symphony set in 2020. I'm Simon Mundy. Join me for another podcast soon.